Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
The Windy City Queer Cast, show number 459. I'm Amy Matheny, and I'm joined on the couch once again by our Memphis transplant, Scotty D.
Hello.
Scott Duff. Hello, improvised
hello.
Chef.
Yes, hello, tis I.
We've been out having culinary experiences this evening.
We have.
To
you
come
went
back.
To Magnolia.
I went to Magnolia in Uptown, which I've never been to, which was really, really lovely. It's kind of like sitting in somebody's oversized dining room with a really cool inlaid bar and
a great soundtrack.
Great soundtrack tonight.
Love that.
Yes, it was a great soundtrack for those of us who remember the 80s.
Yes, and I went to Acre's sister restaurant.
Yes.
Which I can't remember the name to right now.
That's okay.
But it's lovely. It's like Italian small plates.
Yeah, because Acre used to be really big in Andersonville, and now they've divided it, you're
yeah,
saying.
Yeah, they kind of
a rustic Italian
it right down the middle, and it's like really hardcore traditional Italian small plates, amazing food, really fresh, yeah. Really live.
Yeah.
I loved it.
You said it was like all things alive and happy.
Yes, it was lovely. And a
thriving.
Great cheese menu.
And a great cheese menu?
Oh, yeah.
You had some cheeses?
I had
what
some
else
cheese.
Did you have?
We had a great like baby octopus salad.
Mm-hmm.
And
I love me some little octopus.
Stuffed portobello.
What was the plural of octopus?
Octopi.
Is it octopi? No.
It's octopi. It's not octopusy.
I'd like it to be octopuses.
I know you would.
Or octopussy.
But it's octopi.
Yeah. I actually remember Octopussy. Wasn't that the name of a movie?
It was a James Bond movie.
Yes, with
it was
Roger
really
Moore.
Good. Yeah.
I remember it.
A bunch of circus people.
Lots of circus. Oh, circus people. I don't
an
know
octopussy,
that.
Yeah.
An octopussy. Yes. Well, we had, there were four of us, and we had this amazing pork ravioli dish that was amazing, a scallop risotto dish that was amazing. I had a filet that had short ribs pulled on top of it.
Oh, shut up.
With horseradish mashed potatoes.
Shut up.
Yeah, it was really good. And a salad that had spinach and goat cheese and beets, and it was really good.
Yum.
It was all really good.
That sounds fantastic.
Yes. And then I've discovered the Whole Foods dark chocolate sea salt caramels.
Oh, hook it to my veins.
Hook
they're
it to
so
your veins.
Good.
They are so good. They're so good. All right, so you are kindly enough sitting down with me to talk to the peoples before you watch the new season premiere of The Walking Dead, which so
girl,
you've not watched
I love
it
me
yet.
Some zombies.
You know, I can't watch the zombies and I can't watch the American Horror because I live alone and it would scare me.
Oh, well, the American Walking Horror Dead. Story is the queerest show I know. On TV.
You need to come up and like stay with me for a month or something sometime so that I can watch the American Horror Story.
I'll come around and scare you in a rubber suit.
And then paint my toenails.
And paint your toenails, yeah.
But The Walking Dead is not just a zombie show. I mean, is it like The X-Files? What's it like? No, is it like anything?
It really is.
Like a Western?
It's kind of like a Western, but like with zombie apocalypse. Because, you know, it's a good Southern boy who's played by a British man. And
always.
He wakes
the Brits
up.
Play the Southerners better they than the really Southerners do. Play the Southerners. They back really to Vivian do. Lee. And
yeah. But, you know, he wakes up and he's in zombie land and they're in Atlanta and there's a little...
Is he a zombie?
No, he's not a zombie.
He's not a zombie?
He's a zombie.
A zombie?
It's not zombie. It's zombie.
It's a zombie.
Because zombies are really scary.
Yeah. They look like they're decaying and stuff. I just kind of can't imagine watching a whole television show. But I hear you're not
it's
the
lovely.
Only person
it's really
amazing.
Great. It's about like personal relationships and what you would do to survive. Yep. And what's the point of living if there are a yep. bunch of zombies everywhere.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Is it a metaphor for something? Like, the zombies are not gay people or anything.
No. I think Aliens is much more of, like, a gay movie. Like, Aliens 3
yep.
is very much about, like, the AIDS crisis.
Yes.
If you think, to me.
Yes. I don't know. I'll have to think on
that. You have
that.
To watch it. I'm telling
I'm
you.
I'm
going to
watch it back.
There
and
is
think
Ripley.
About
she's got a shaved head. She's with all men. They are very gaunt in appearance. And they all know that they're going to die.
Who knew?
I know, it's very deep. And then Alien 4 is all about abortion.
I didn't see
abortion.
Alien 4. Aliens is my favorite. The second one.
Yes.
Wait, is that Aliens or Alien?
That's Aliens.
Aliens, yeah. It's one of the best movies ever made, I believe, quite frankly. Well, you know, we're having this crazy ass weather. Like, you've just experienced a little snowfall.
My first
not
snow
really
ever.
Spitty snow this
but
winter.
For me, because I'm
you.
In Memphis. But.
Yes, because you're in Tennessee. They've just had huge tornadoes in Tennessee, not near where you are, but East Tennessee, and lots of people, areas from my hometown, you know, really devastated by that. But we've just had this bizarre winter up here that I think is the new normal. Like, everybody keeps telling me, some of my friends were teasing me and saying that literally the hairspray that I use in Enron is probably attributed to global warming, which has created a hole in the ozone layer big enough that we've actually not had cold weather, really.
It's beyond El Nino.
Yeah, it's beyond El Nino. Nino.
It's El Año.
It's El Claudia Royo. We've had this like amazing, we're having this amazing warm weather this week. But I noticed that even though we've had all this sunshine, which you're used to in Tennessee, but we're not used to having this much sunshine all winter long. We've had all this beautiful sunshine and this pretty moderate winter, but people have been, let me just say for myself, me and a lot of people that I was around this past week were all like, oh my God, I'm so tired. I'm so tired. I'm so tired. Well, I think that something should happen when it's a leap year, because we had an extra day in February, and I think all of us are exhausted from the 29th of February. It's a new theory that I have.
Girl.
I do. I think having an extra day in the month is exhausting, potentially.
Well, it could be. I always thought that, like, living in Chicago, I always said there was a reason why God made February 28 days, because it's a horrible month.
It normally is, but it has not been horrible here.
No.
So I think everybody's been out playing and experience it and enjoy filled, and I think we're all, like, freaking exhausted from it. I don't know. I have a very good friend whose birthday is on leap year, Kimberly. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. You're what, like, 4?
Exactly. Well, she's not 4. She wishes she was 4.
Okay,
she's
like
to me.
7.
No, she's more than that. Okay. What is it? When does leap years happen? Every
4 years.
No. Is it every 4 years? Okay. Well, then she's 12.
Girl, you just gave her age.
I did, but I didn't say her last name.
Okay, whatever. You're old, girl.
And we know, because we're right there with you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's got to be weird to be born on leap year and really only have your birthday.
Once every 4 years.
And it was leap day, hump day this year.
Oh, it was.
Which I thought was quite sexy.
So that must be magical.
And I hope all of you guys had sex on the leap day, hump day.
With like unicorns farting rainbows.
I think so. I like when unicorns fart rainbows.
You know, I had a unicorn walk by my house the other day.
Yeah.
And not only did it fart a rainbow, but it threw up some tricks.
Tricks are for kids.
Well, yeah. I don't know what.
So I want to know, are you watching the new show Smash?
I am. I've missed the last couple episodes because...
There's only been three or four.
No, there's been more than that. Okay. I saw the first couple, but I missed the past two because of personal tragedy.
Yes.
I'm kind of enjoying it.
Yeah.
Although I know a lot of people have issues with it.
Yeah, I was kind of enjoying it. And the first episode, I was like, oh, this can be really interesting. And then it's taken some... I think some of the fringe characters they could just get rid of and focus on what we're really interested in.
Yeah, and I'm tired of like Angelica Houston. Yeah, we know. You throw drinks.
See, I like Angelica Houston.
I love Angelica Houston.
I don't love the little assistant so much. That whole storyline, which maybe you haven't seen much of, is not floating my boat. But the two girls, I actually am kind of interested in their storyline.
Girl, they can sing, and I'm really impressed with Catherine McPhee.
Yeah, I am too.
You know, she...
I am too.
I loved her on The House Bunny.
The House Bunny?
Girl, have you not seen The House Bunny?
I've not seen The House Bunny.
Oh, shut up.
Is that Anna Faris?
It's Anna Faris, but it's also like where Emma Stone kind of made her first.
Emma Stone. I thought she was, of the non-nominees, she was the highlight for me.
Kind of want to smell her because she smells a little bit like baby powder and roses.
Aww.
Don't you think?
I think so.
And her little, like, cute little, I'm wearing a little.
Her lemon meringue.
Yeah.
I just think she's lovely. She's just
fresh. Wonderful. And when she was on the Oscars, her little.
Very funny.
Shtick.
Yeah. She's her little speech impediment thing that she has. She has a very particular way
of
speaking.
It's like Cecilia Shirer Griffin Pickle Wingate.
She also sounds like my cousin Amanda. It's very cute.
That crazy, like, thrust eth.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's adorable.
Yeah.
She's adorable.
She's wonderful. I kind of want to be her best friend.
Yeah. Okay, so The House Bunny. What was the reference to The House Bunny? Catherine McPhee.
She was in The House Bunny. That was her first acting role.
Well, who knew?
Well, I did.
I don't. That's why I'm on your couch. I didn't like her because, yes, and also because you're gay.
Well, yeah.
But I, it's not that I didn't like her, but everybody, you know, of course, with American Idol was on and on and on about her because, and I remember her singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow and everybody going, oh my God, it's like the best version ever. And I was like, you know what? It's a direct copy of Ava Cassidy. She didn't do anything and Ava Cassidy's dead and can't stand up and go, this American Idol girl who's acting
sure
like she did this.
Are you sure you're not a gay man? Because I don't watch American Idol. I hate American Idol.
Well, I didn't watch it that season until the very tail end and they were like, this Somewhere Over the Rainbow was so brilliant and I was listening to it and I was like, that's Ava Cassidy's Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And it was the number one song. It beat the Beatles and the Stones in the UK, her version, before, you know, after she died when she people started discovering Ava Cassidy. And if you don't know who she is, go look her up on YouTube because she was this young woman under 40 who recorded all these amazing albums and she died of cancer. And then a British radio station found her and started playing, specifically her playing guitar and singing Summer of the Rainbow, which is exactly the way Catherine McPhee recorded it, except Ava's is better because she's got a darker sound to her voice but more soulful. And she's playing guitar and she created the arrangement. And then it became the number one aired song on Billboard's charts in the UK over the Beatles and the Rolling Stones of all time. And then all these other albums came out about her. She's a fascinating story.
Wow.
So I just kind of felt like Catherine McPhee, like, you know, took something that, granted, I would have sung an Ava Cassidy version of almost any song Ava Cassidy did because she was a brilliant interpreter of song. But I never heard her say, oh, this was Ava Cassidy's, and I mean, she had not picked the same arrangement out of her butt that Ava Cassidy had done, like, you know, 5 or 6 years later, and earlier, or more.
Who are you?
I don't know.
I have no idea who you are, because I've never seen you so passionate about that.
Because I'm really passionate about Ava Cassidy.
Well, there we go.
There you go.
Well, then go run to YouTube, Ava Cassidy.
Run to listen to her. Buy every song she's ever done, because it's extraordinary. And there aren't that many. There's like 4 CDs that they've somehow configured, and they're all covers. But brilliant.
But I enjoy her on this. Yeah, I think she's really great. I think she's very charming.
Yep.
She sounds really good.
Yeah.
I have not seen the past couple episodes. I know I'm a bad gay, but
yeah. Well, and it's good to see Grace back on stage.
Love her. Love her.
Debbie. Like, what's her name?
Deborah Messing.
Yeah, Deborah Messing. I love her.
Like, I think if Deborah Messing, Emma Stone, and I could have a sleepover, we'd have a lot of brownies, and we'd probably play with each other's hair a lot.
I like it. You'd have to go red.
I would.
You'd have to go
and
red.
And I have.
And you,
I
have, been you red. Have. You have. You've, I have you've been red. Everything.
I can do
you've
it.
You've been blonde, brunette, redheaded, bald.
Bald.
You've been everything.
Bearded.
Bearded.
A lady.
So sexy.
That's me.
Just you. Well, just you, just Scott, just Jack will be with us for the show. We're going to talk about a show that has been playing and is going to continue to play for a little bit longer at Steppenwolf for their Theater for Young Audiences. I talked about this show with playwright Sarah Gubbins back in the fall when she was really just starting to write the first drafts of this play. We were talking about her other play, The Kid Thing, and she had gotten this commission to write this play, FML, How Carson McCullers Saved My Life. And Scott and I both saw it separately this past week. Dan Savage is coming to town this weekend to talk about the, you know, the It Gets Better campaign. And Scott and I are going to talk about it a little bit and just the issues that it brings up around young people and educators, school systems, bullying, all of this. But before that, we've got news, what's going on in the theater scene in general. And then we'll be back with Scott Duff and me on the couch.
Come on back.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News. In Texas, Dallas County Judge Tanya Parker has said she won't perform marriage ceremonies until same-sex couples can wed. Parker has added that she passes marriage ceremonies on to other judges so they can be completed. Parker was elected 2 years ago and is the first out lesbian to be elected a county judge in Dallas.
SoulForce's 2012 Equality Ride, a two-month-long social justice bus tour of young LGBTQ activists to fundamentalist anti-LGBTQ religious colleges and universities throughout the country, kicked off recently in Philadelphia. The activists will ride until April 29th. Now in its fifth tour, the ride has visited more than 70 fundamentalist anti-LGBTQ religious colleges and universities.
Senator Jean Shaheen, the Democrat from New Hampshire, is asking the Democratic Party to endorse same-sex marriage in its platform. Shaheen is one of the national co-chairs for the re-election campaign of President Obama, who does not support marriage equality but is reportedly evolving on the issue. The Democratic platform will be ratified at the party's national convention, which begins September 3rd in Charlotte, North Carolina.
U.S. Senator Olympia Snowe is one of the few moderate Republicans in the legislative body, and she will not seek a fourth term in 2012. Snowe, who voted to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell in December 2010, is now the 10th senator who plans to retire at the end of the current term.
In Texas, Vincent Pryor accepted the Atticus Circle Award for his courage in coming out to his football team his senior year at Texas Christian University in 1994. Pryor was gratified by the honor, but added that his journey to being a confident football player who owned his sexuality was long and painful. Atticus Circle is a group that educates and rallies straight people to advocate for LGBT equality.
Hawaii Governor Neil Abercrombie will not defend the state's ban against same-sex marriage in light of a pending lawsuit against Hawaii's Department of Health, which grants marriage licenses. Hawaii has a law allowing civil unions, but has had a constitutional amendment against marriage equality since 1998.
In Minnesota, St. Louis Park is expected to pass a resolution objecting to a proposed state constitutional amendment that would prohibit same-sex marriage. St. Louis Park would be the fourth municipality to oppose the ban, joining Minneapolis, Duluth, and St. Paul.
In Missouri, St. Anne Catholic School music teacher Al Fisher was fired after church officials discovered he planned to marry his male partner of 20 years in New York. Fisher sent a letter to students' parents informing them of my joyful news and my sad news that he is getting married and that the school was letting him go.
In Indiana, Purdue University is seeking the school's first director of gay and lesbian student services. Most of the other schools in the Big Ten Conference have had the post for years.
In Massachusetts, Newton Mayor Seti Warren has appointed the first transgender representative to the city's Human Rights Commission. Transgender rights activist Holly Ryan was named for a three-year term.
In world news, in Russia, St. Petersburg legislators officially adopted a bill that would impose fines of up to $16,700 for the promotion of homosexuality. The bill criminalizes reading, writing, speaking, or reporting on anything related to LGBT people.
In South Africa, the organizers of Mr. Gay World have unveiled what is believed to be the first ever gay-themed billboard in Africa. Also, the event is having its first ever black contestants with representatives from Zimbabwe, Ethiopia, South Africa, and Namibia. The competition will take place April 4th through 8th in Johannesburg.
In Liberia, the government is considering two anti-gay measures. The law does not explicitly address homosexuality, although voluntary sodomy is a misdemeanor punishable by up to a year in prison. However, a bill has been introduced making same-sex sexual practices a second-degree felony. Former First Lady Senator Jewel Taylor also introduced a measure making same-sex marriage a first-degree felony with prison sentences of up to 10 years.
In Malaysia, a court rejected gay rights activists' attempt to reverse a ban on an LGBT-themed festival. Police banned the fourth annual Sexuality Freedom Festival before it was to open in November, saying they made the move to avoid angering Muslims. On March 1st, the court in Kuala Lumpur sided with government attorneys who said police acted within their powers to prevent any sort of disturbance. In Malaysia, sodomy is punishable by up to 20 years in prison.
In entertainment news, the daytime soap opera Days of Our Lives made history February 23rd with the show's first same-sex kiss. College student Will, played by Chandler Massey, engaged in a steamy kiss with classmate Neil, Jesse Christopherson, who is the son of Chris.
The finale of the PBS series Downton Abbey drew the biggest audience for public television in more than 3 years. The finale was viewed by 5.4 million viewers.
Radio host Fez Watley came out of the closet on the one-year anniversary of his father's death. Watley is half of the daily program The Ron and Fez Show on Sirius XM Radio and has played a gay character on the air for more than 20 years.
Cher is embarking on yet another tour. The tour will start in Kansas. Dates and venues of the entire tour will be announced soon.
The new Dancing with the Stars cast has been unveiled. The celebrities include lesbian tennis legend Martina Navratilova, Gladys Knight, actor Jack Wagner, Melissa Gilbert, telenovela hottie William Levy, singer Gavin DeGraw, and entertainment reporter Maria Menounos. The new season starts March 19th.
Former Xena and current Spartacus actress Lucy Lawless was recently arrested with other Greenpeace activists after 4 days of occupying an Arctic-bound shell drill ship. The activists were on top of a 170-foot drilling tower for 77 hours before they were arrested and charged with burglary, although prosecutors had the option of leveling a lesser charge.
Logo has announced the nominees for the 2012 New Now Next Awards, honoring icons, trendsetters, and stars on the rise. See newnownext.com to view the nominees and cast your votes. Winners will be revealed Monday, April 9th on Logo's award show.
Alan Ball, the openly gay creator of the HBO series True Blood, is stepping down from running the show after the fifth season. If the show is picked up for a sixth season, he will stay on as an advisor.
Legendary composer slash lyricist Stephen Sondheim is working on a musical with David Ives. Tony Award winner Sondheim, who is 81, has written 20 or 30 minutes of the new piece.
Amy Ray, known as half of the Indigo Girls, has released the CD Lung of Love on her own Damon Records, and her U.S. tour starts March 10th in Atlanta and includes her first South by Southwest appearance in over a decade. The first CD single is entitled Glow.
Out reality TV star and stylist Brad Goreski reveals an assortment of issues in his new memoir, Born to be Brad. He talks about how he was bullied in his hometown of Port Perry, Ontario, because of his chubby build and bold dress sense. He also admits problems with drugs, including alcohol and cocaine. Goreski, who is 34, shot to fame as Rachel Zoe's assistant on the show, The Rachel Zoe Project.
And Tony and Emmy Award-winning actress Kristen Chenoweth kicks off her first concert tour May 9th in Seattle. Among her stops are Denver, May 18th, Chicago, June 16th, and Nashville, June 20th. She'll finish, of course, in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma on June 24th. For more, see kristen-chenoweth.com.
And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hi, I'm Amy Ray, and you're listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative. Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of March 5th, 2012, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. When Claudia left Ian and her old life in adult entertainment, she thought she had found a new start. But when Ian shows up weeks before her wedding to the local youth minister and man of God, everything is thrown into turmoil. Welcome to Hesperia, where everyone has something to hide. Visit writerstheater.org for more. Hesperia is playing at Writers Theater now.
Lifeline Theater continues its 29th anniversary season of big stories up close with a world premiere adaptation of Hunger, Elise Blackwell's novel about the World War II siege of Leningrad. Hunger runs Thursday through Sundays through March 25th. For tickets and more, visit lifelinetheater.com.
Paula Poundstone returns to the North Shore Center for another fabulous, unforgettable performance. Paula took the comedy world by storm in 1989 by winning the American Comedy Award for Best Female Comic. She now appears on NPR's quiz show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and as a regular guest on A Prairie Home Companion. Paula Poundstone, one show only, Friday, March 30th at North Shore Center in Skokie. For tickets, visit northshorecenter.org.
Man Boobs is a new dark comedy by J. Julian Christopher, presented by Pride Films and Plays at Mary's Attic and starring Michael Hampton and Rick Hines, directed by David Zack. Man Boobs is playing now through March 10th. For tickets, visit brownpapertickets.com. Man Boobs is unlike any gay play you have ever seen.
And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller? Post a comment at windycityqueercast.com. Sitting here on the couch, and a friend of mine, a friend of Scott's, playwright, openly lesbian, Sarah Gubbins of Chicago, was commissioned by Steppenwolf Theater for Young Audiences, and their shows are for high school students primarily, and they've been doing this for a number of years now, and many of the shows that have been adapted are either inspired by literature or direct adaptations.
I've done a couple of them.
You've done a couple of them. Which ones did you do?
I did one called Words on Fire, which was all about it was poems about Chicago written by Chicago poets.
There you go.
And then I did another one about Carl Sandburg,
of course,
the big Chicago writer.
Right.
So yeah, I love working at Steppenwolf, and I love doing those projects for the youth.
Yeah.
Like going in for high school audiences. It's really great because it's very immediate, and the response is so visceral.
Yeah, and it's not like children's theater.
Yeah. Oh, not at all.
You know, where you're farming out shows. And it's also not like kids just coming to see a Shakespeare play. That's, you know, there's so much thought that goes into what stories would we tell these kids and how would we present it and how would we tell them. And so earlier this year, Steppenwolf did an adaptation of The Heart is a Lonely Hunter. Right. That is the Carson McCullers famous novel. It was quite beautiful production. And they knew that they were going to be doing that production. And so a year ago, they asked Sarah Gubbins, would she create a contemporary play inspired by The Heart is a Lonely Hunter? And so Sarah... I think in light of this past year and what was going on even the year before that, or what was garnering kind of national media and I would say new media technology attention, the plight of gay bashing, gay suicide, you know, just what was the impact of just the world today, you know, I mean, now that gay images are everywhere, I think we sometimes think, well, it's got to be so much easier on kids today. And I think
You know, my understanding from when I started working in radio and to now is that, you know, much of this transparency has disallowed kids to kind of fly under the radar some, and also kids have more information, and so they're those who are fearful or ignorant or feel threatened, you know, are lashing out, like kind of pushing against, you know, what's coming to the surface. If that's true, maybe that's my one of my perceptions of it. You know, maybe the bullying and the suicides have been going on, you know, even 20 years ago and 10 years ago. Maybe we're just hearing more about it. You know, I don't know that we know all the statistics on that. But, you know, Sarah wrote this play, really beautiful play. And I think really, and I want to hear what your thoughts were on it too, Scott, you know, of a junior girl. Fairly tomboy basketball player.
And smart.
Smart and sensitive and confident.
And kind.
And kind. Kind and confident girl, junior in high school, who is also way into graphic novels and is an artist and writing her own or sketching constantly graphic stories. And it's really her experience in high school and her best gay friend, or her a gay ally, male gay ally, Mickey, and then or Mick, and then a straight girl that she's hanging around. And
she's a transfer student, which I found was interesting, from California.
Yeah, Emma, who's new, kind of an outsider making her way in, but pretty unpopular, or you know that kind of popular girl. And then a teacher, you know, who is the English teacher.
Ms. D.
Mm-hmm, who is an AP English teacher and has them read The Heart is a Lonely Hunter. And, I mean, that's kind of the premise of it and just this experience that she goes through. And I just really wanted, I was so excited that you were willing, and I know you would want to anyhow, but while you were visiting that you were able to go and see it.
Oh,
because we both know Sarah and love the work that Steppenwolf does, but because you've been teaching, you know, you've gone from being an actor and writer and performer and improviser, and then you went into Memphis City Schools schools,
it was a private school.
Private school, but in a different culture, environment, community, more conservative, and started teaching high school students. And I'm just kind of curious, do you have any stories around being a teacher and being out or not being out or recognizing gay kids or not recognizing gay kids?
Oh God, yeah. Like my first year teaching was really horrible, actually. Yeah.
Why? Why would you
say
because
that? On the very first day, as a teacher in a private school, I was responsible for a group of students that was my advisory.
Right.
And during the summer, we had to call the parents and students just to be like, hey, I'm going to be your advisor.
Right.
I'm new here. Shmena, shmena. On my first day of teaching, it was 10 minutes before the day started, and the assistant head of school came over to me and said, hey, this student is not going to be in your advisory. His parents cited religious reasons.
Now, did they know you were gay?
They kind of put two and two together. They had a phone call for me. They were like, oh, it's the theater teacher, and he's a very animated gay man. Well, animated man. And they put it together. I'm like, oh, there we go. He's gay.
Uh-huh.
So I began my teaching career by saying, hey, they don't want you here. And by the end of that day, actually, the president of the school had me in his office saying, putting me on the don't ask, don't tell policy.
And what did that mean?
That meant that kids are going to ask about your personal life, and you should not say anything. And I was furious. I was absolutely livid because
I don't ever remember asking a teacher about their personal life.
Though. Well, but there were so many times when they would share anecdotes. Like the heterosexual teachers would be like, oh, my husband or my wife or my kids. They could freely say stuff like that.
Right.
And you kind of understood a little bit more about them. Especially like in the private schools where you are very much encouraged to have a relationship with your students.
Yep.
Where it's supposed to be like, hey, young people and older people can create a community.
Right.
And I was told I could not do that.
Were you the only gay teacher in the
whole school? No, I wasn't. That was something that was so frustrating. I'm like, because they were in the closet.
Ah.
And I knew them. I'm like,
were they male or female or both?
Both.
Uh-huh.
Both. But it wasn't until about a month into my first year that we went to some faculty retreat, and there was, of all things, a Methodist minister who was giving us this talk.
Uh-huh.
And talking about his experience going through a cave with bats and being scared about going through this, like, small opening. And that he felt free to share his fear with the younger people. That they really understood that he was a person. And the thing that he said at the very end was, the best thing you can give your students is to be your authentic self.
Mm. Good for him.
I know, right?
Go Methodist.
And then from that moment, I was like, all right, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to be who I am. People can ask questions. I don't have to necessarily answer directly.
Right.
But I'm not going to skirt around the issue. Because my biggest issue was, like in the play, what if a student was to come up to me in crisis?
Right.
And they were to be like, hi, I think I might be gay, or I have these feelings. What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
And me, as the well-adjusted adult, was supposed to say, I'm sorry, I can't talk about that.
Mm.
Well, that's not going to fly with me.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it happened basically 3 weeks after I had that epiphany. I had a student who's like, I need to talk to you. And we, it was very intense.
Mm.
So, but happy ending. By the end of that first year, I got a handwritten letter of apology from the president of the school, saying, you know, I forgot how horrible your year began, and I want to apologize to you because you have been a beacon of light throughout this entire year, and you are teaching people in ways you have no idea that you're teaching them, which was great. And I still have a copy of that letter.
Oh.
So, yeah. So I think with this whole issue of FML.
Because this is a prep academy as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's a prep college school.
Well, it's a Catholic school.
And it's Catholic.
So that's pretty intense. We're an Episcopal school where I taught. But,
right.
But there's something about teachers who are... The best gift you can be is your authentic self.
Mm.
And for you to just be up there and be true to who you are and try not to give opinions on things, but just give facts.
Right. Your experience.
And understand, like, who you are.
Right.
And show people that I'm a good person. You may not feel that way.
Right.
Because of what you've been taught.
Yeah.
But to model good behavior, people... change.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what did you experience as much as you can, or what did you witness for young kids that you thought were gay or you knew were gay? A push against them from other students?
Or? Oh, yeah, from other students, from administration, from the parents.
Mm.
Like, I love the whole Trevor Project and the whole It Gets Better Project. I think it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that we all forget is that being a teenager sucks.
Mm.
It's just really, really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And while, yes, it does get better, but for a couple of years, you're going to go through some shit.
Yeah.
I mean, I came out when I was in high school, and even in college, I had stuff written on my door. I was chased by the Northwestern football team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've had my share of licks.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't get better until 6 years or so afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. See, and I just, you know, I skirted under that radar. I mean, I did and I didn't, you know. In high school, I got accused of being a lesbian my freshman year. Which was
of high school. Oh, wow.
I had never done anything with a woman. I had never touched a woman. I was dating guys. I dated your boyfriend about a year after all this stuff happened, or a year and a half or so. But, you know, it was kind of like this rumor. And I guess, I mean, you know, the kids saw something I didn't see, or they didn't, or they made me gay. And you guys are all just
they
lucky.
Made you gay, yeah.
They made me the professional lesbian that I am today. I don't know. But, you know, I mean, I remember when I came out to my dad in my 20s, and because I didn't come out to my dad and mom immediately after coming out. And I remember my dad saying, "Do you remember when you came home from school that day and you were crying and you were so upset and you had called us from school and said, 'Come get me now'?" And I was kind of as a freshman, nobody's a popular kid as a freshman. But I mean, I was in the in crowd right. with the freshman kids, you know, or whatever. And I guess this rumor had been going around for quite a while. And I didn't know about it. And, you know, I was oblivious to it. And I was just devastated because I wasn't sexual, you know. There was nothing for me. It wasn't the same as being like, you know, the people that I know very well, who are like, I've known since I hit puberty, or I've known since right. I was, you know, in the third grade or 10. Or I often hear gay men say they kind of know around that time, like somewhere between 10, 11, you know, 12, they're starting to really know, you know. And I just didn't have a consciousness around it. And I think my story for some girls is similar. I just didn't have a consciousness around it, you know. So I had that experience, but that died down and seemed to be more just about kind of some weird rumor, or there was nothing to back it up. And I just thought it was the most bizarre thing ever. And I was just kind of offended by it. And that anybody was gossiping about me about anything, you know, when you're a freshman, you just right. don't want anybody talking about you. That's not good. Yeah. You know, you're a freshman. But that just kind of went away. And then, you know, when I came out, you know, I was coming out as I was leaving college. And so I was hanging around older theater people, and I didn't have any of that experience, you know. And I guess because I'm pretty straight presenting to most people, I guess. And, you know, and I've gotten some flack in the gay community for that, but it just is. It is my authentic self.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So, but I know that my story is atypical. I know your story is more typical, you know, of the really hard years of the, you know, of what you just said. Like, I mean, high school was awful, but not really awful. Because of my sexuality. And maybe my high school wasn't so awful because I was with your boyfriend.
That's true.
And we were both gay and hanging out. And like,
and he looked like Tarzan.
He looks like Tarzan. And he had long hair, like a flock of seagulls, or not flock of seagulls.
No, not
more
a flock
like
of
Wham.
Seagulls.
It
was like Tarzan.
It was kind of like Tarzan.
It was like Tarzan. It was like very long and flowing and luxurious.
Yeah.
It was lovely.
He was pretty and soft.
Yes, and he was the president of Students Staying Straight.
Students Staying Straight, which had nothing to do with sexuality, but everything to do with not drinking and taking drugs, because we were of that Nancy Reagan era.
Oh, yeah. Just say no.
Just say no. But, yeah. So, I know my story is more rare, and your story of surviving high school is more.
But the thing that I really liked about this play is the fact that Sarah did a really lovely job of presenting characters that were three-dimensional.
Yep.
It speaks to a younger audience, but never goes into the land of after-school special.
Or talking down to them.
The best theater for young audiences never talks down to them. It always meets them at their level or above.
Yeah.
And she does that with real, like, grace and aplomb. And there are moments when you just don't like the gay characters, because they go and they turn and they attack on their ally.
Mm.
And
bite the hand that feeds you.
Yes, you're like, oh,
hurt those that are closest to you.
It's really lovely. And actually watching it, I really wanted every high school parent, not the students, I wanted parents to watch this play. Just because I think we've all gone through high school, we've gone through the horrible, horrible, horribleness that is adolescence, so that you can kind of understand that what's going on nowadays with technology, with texting, because texting is a big
thing. How they use texting is huge.
And it's great. It's all about, like, you're texting one thing and you're presenting something else yep. to the people that you're in real conversation with. Yeah,
the dishonesty of texting, the lack of intimacy yeah, in texting, the massive amount of communication it is, and yet it's so controlled, and it's so, yeah.
Yeah, and the opening scene is all like, there's a teacher up there, the new teacher, and a student is texting through the entire thing, and yep. Lord knows I knew that. I recognized that as soon as that happened.
Yeah.
But just the fact that how kids communicate these days and how there's so much information just being pummeled at them
mm-hmm.
that we in our generation who now have high school kids
mm-hmm.
don't really fully understand unless they've been in the trenches. And I really wish that high school parents mm. of high school kids could come see this just so they understand, like, oh yeah, bullying happened in our day, but there's a whole new level that can happen with Facebook and texting and mm-hmm. Twitter and all sorts of things
mm-hmm.
and there's a really strong message there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just amazing how they present it. I mean, you know, obviously they have young people in the play.
Yeah.
They have a big brother. The big brother character for the lesbian central figure, I think, is a great character too, because he kind of sees how he is passive. Like, mm-hmm. he thinks his sister's so great, but he has also kind of had, you don't see any parents in the play.
Yeah, no.
Which is really interesting. And it's a way, I think, kind of in a weird way, exemplifies kind of how we are, because we disassociate with our parents. We start disassociating with our parents so much in high school that mm-hmm. they're just not there, you know, and then fully disassociate with our parents if you go to college. You know, it's like this the first time we're totally on our own. But you know, I thought that was really interesting to have this big brother character who can say at some point, like, I've been a shitty big brother.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you yeah. know, like, I've been a douchebag. Like, yeah. I haven't, like, and I love that character, you know, of just that relationship between him and her friends and, you know, the big brother and the little sister, mm-hmm. you know, and the admiration
and
he has for her.
And
also
this great teacher person who comes in like that. Everybody's had that wonderful role model of a teacher somewhere mm-hmm. in their life, mm-hmm. you know, and to have her, like, as this strong central figure
mm-hmm.
who's trying to help her out
mm-hmm.
in ways that don't seem very much like, I'm helping you. It's more like, well, let's talk, let's have conversation, let's hear mm-hmm. what is your response to this piece of literature
mm-hmm.
which the whole play is around,
right?
It's kind of great. It's lovely that the main adult figure is somebody who asks questions.
Mm, yeah, and doesn't talk at, just wants to hear,
like,
what you
just
have to say.
Let's have questions.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if we want to get all biblical and everything, it's very like, you know, what a rabbi is. Rabbi is teacher.
Yeah.
You know, and she's there to just
yeah
listen.
Yeah. Well, it's a really lovely play, and if you get an opportunity to go to Steppenwolf and see it, it is playing through March 18th, so there's not much time left, but go to steppenwolf.org, and it's called FML, which I don't even know what that means. There's a whole text guide in the back of the program, but it means fuck my life.
Hell yeah.
Fuck my life, how Carson McCullers saved my life, and I just really strongly recommend it.
And this
and
Friday,
the
if you're in town.
Yeah, absolutely.
This Friday is in...
Friday night.
Friday night, March 9th. Is that it?
Okay.
This Friday, whatever. But
yeah,
Dan Savage
Friday.
Is going to be in town.
He is.
Having a post-show discussion with his brother, who's a professor from Northwestern, who's going to be coming in to talk about the Trevor Project, the
It Gets Better campaign.
And if you can get there, go. And the best thing, too, the next two Saturdays... For students, it's pay what you can.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really, really cool.
So.
And you can find out more information on their Facebook page, facebook.com/Joe, J-O-F-M-L. And we'll have that linked in our show notes, facebook.com/J-O-F-M-L. And you become a friend of Joe, and there's going to be pictures and post-show discussion things and all kinds of information about the show on
Facebook.
And one
cool thing, apparently Joe, who's the main character of the show.
Yeah.
has more Facebook friends than I do.
What?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
She's got over 1,000 friends right now.
I have to say, I really loved seeing it with high school students. I went on at 10 o'clock in the morning on a weekday and saw it. And I loved seeing it. And they did a post-show discussion. And Sarah Gubbins, the playwright, was on stage. And it's very strange that this young actress who's playing the central character, Jo, just really has taken on many Sarah Gubbins.
She looks just like her. Oh, mannerisms. My gosh, that's crazy.
And she used to have long brown hair, and now she's cut all her hair off for the play. And but one of the kids, because the kids asked the questions, and one of the kids said, so, you know, have you had to, you know, approach this character differently since it's a lesbian character? And, you know, than you would any other character. And she's like, well, you know, I'm not a lesbian, but luckily, you know, well, Sarah's a real life lesbian. And I mean, I just started dying laughing. And she's like, I got a real life lesbian right here because Sarah's a real life lesbian. Everybody started laughing in the whole audience. And then she was like, oh gosh, did I just out you? And Sarah was like, I think I'm pretty out.
She's user-friendly Gina Gershon.
Yes, she is user-friendly Gina Gershon. But it was just really funny. I was like, that's going to be the quote of all your publicity as a real life lesbian. So go check out real life lesbian Sarah Gubbins' play, FML.
Her fabulous play, yeah.
At Steppenwolf, and become a friend of Joe's, facebook.com/JOFML. And I hope you have a good week. It's warming up. And yeah. There's so much fun things in the springtime. I love the springtime.
I love the springtime, too.
Bunnies and chicks.
Yes.
And peeps.
And peeps are fun to put in the microwave.
Ooh, let's go do that now.
Let's do it.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.